Welcome to Pastor Matters, the podcast of the Center for Preaching and Pastoral Leadership at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We hope this conversation will both equip and encourage you to lead healthy churches that make disciples for the glory of God.
I'm Chuck Wallace.
And I'm Caleb Iverson.
We welcome you to this edition of the Pastors Matter podcast of the Center for Preaching and Pastoral Leadership at Southeastern Seminary. Caleb, we have a good guest with us today, Dr. Benjamin Quinn, who serves as Associate Professor of Theology and History of Ideas here at Southeastern. But more than that, Dr. Quinn, I understand you're a baseball fan. Yes or no?
Yes, me and Jesus, we're baseball fans. It's important.
And who is your team?
St. Louis Cardinals. And I've never asked you this, Dr. Lawless, but I'm assuming you're a Cincinnati fan.
Oh, rabid. Yes, yes. And so I don't like St. Louis a whole lot. Like, not at all.
That's all right. You know, when I think of Cincinnati, I just think, well, it could be the Cubs. So we'll just go with that.
No, that's a fair point. Now, my first ball game I ever went to was 1970. The Reds had just moved into their new stadium that they've since demolished. But it was the first game I ever went to with my dad. And it left a mark in my life. And so yeah. I still to this day love the Cincinnati Reds, love the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm a Cincinnati fan, though I haven't lived there for 25 years.
Well, those are good memories. Those are some of my first memories, too, especially when I was really young. My family just couldn't afford to do much by way of vacation. And so where I'm from, in a little town in very northeast corner of Mississippi, we were equidistant between the Atlanta Braves and the St. Louis Cardinals, but my dad hated the Atlanta traffic. So we could afford to go to St. Louis for one night. And if we timed it right, we could see two games, a Friday, Saturday. And so watching Ozzie Smith do backflips on the field and Jack Clark hitting balls out of the stadium and Lee Smith coming in as a reliever. I mean, these are the stuff of childhood memories.
Yeah, and those are names most people don't remember. Those are good names. I grew up during the big Red Machine, Pete Rose, yes. Tony Perez, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, yeah. just great years. And so, all right, well, let's get on to what we're talking about today. We're glad you're here. You are serving as a professor at Southeastern. How long have you been with us at Southeastern?
I've been a faculty member for, this is the end of my 12th year full-time.
Okay. Well, we're glad you're a part of that. But we really want to talk about something else today. You are also serving as a pastor. So tell us where you're serving and how long you've been there.
Yeah, I love it. So I'm at a church called Holly Grove Baptist Church in Spring Hope, North Carolina. So that's about 35 minutes east of where we are at Southeastern. This is my second time serving at Holly Grove. So when I was a student at Southeastern from 2006 to 2010, we just joined the church by way of membership initially. And we went out there because the guy who was the pastor at the time, I had met him on a mission trip to New Orleans, helping to clean up at Katrina after Katrina. And I just overheard him talking about that he had a number of new believers, but he didn't have any help. And he needed anything from Sunday school teachers to youth workers to musicians to all kinds of things. And so I talked to him later and said, hey, my wife and I are relatively new in the area. I'm a Southeastern student, and I just want to help. I'm not looking for money, not looking for a job. I just want to help. And so for the next almost 4 years, served primarily as the music minister at Holly Grove, along with a little bit of youth and education type of stuff. And this is a small church. At the time, there might have been 75 or 80 people on a regular basis. And we stayed there for 4 years. When I started doctoral work, something just had to come off the plate. So I stepped away. And in 2017, the gentleman who was there as the pastor when I left the church, he was moving to Virginia. And so some friends at the church reached out and said, hey, would you help us through our transition? And Dr. Lawless, that was 7 years ago. So we agreed to, initially it was we'll give it 6 months. This was also during the holiday season. I knew that they wouldn't make much traction trying to find a pastor during Thanksgiving and Christmas. And about 3 months into our interim time, some of the leadership of the church approached us to see if we would consider staying. And I spent about a month trying to talk them out of it. But it seemed like a really good fit and a good time, and so we've been there ever since.
Well, you have just described what we wanted to talk about today, and that's bivocational ministry. As we're recording this podcast, I'm actually in East Tennessee. Met with a friend this morning and learned about the vast number of pastors in this part of this state who are bivocational. By far, the majority are bivocational. You're doing that now. You've been doing that for a number of years. I think we need to be thinking about that. If we're going to reach North America, we're not going to do it with only full-time pastors. We've got to have pastors thinking about earning their main paycheck from someone else and yet serving in leading a church. So that's the choice that you have made at this point. What are some benefits and things you enjoy about doing bivocational ministry?
Yeah, let me just double down on what you're saying. That's is absolutely true and right, I think. And it's not just East Tennessee. I'm from North Mississippi, and I live in sort of East Central North Carolina. That's the story everywhere. And we're only talking about Baptists. We could expand to other denominations, and this is the same story. There are so many churches that that are willing to pay somebody, and there's just not enough pastors, not enough preachers. So that's a call for more people to take up that mantle and responsibility. I think we're also at a situation or at a time where we may very well be returning to some level of what you might call the circuit rider days or circuit preacher days. And I haven't done this yet, but I've offered to do this as needed, that I may be at 8:30 at this church, 9:30 at that church, 10:30 at my church at some point in the not too distant future. And it's not ideal. I want to be very clear about that. But at the same time, where there is need, I think we need to be willing sometimes to work outside of those ideals. And that takes me directly to your question. I think in terms of the benefits of bivocational ministry, again, I don't think that being bivocational is necessarily ideal, but there are some very real benefits to it. One of them is, and this is in no particular order, but probably the biggest benefit is that when the people that we serve know that we put our boots on and go to work on Monday just like they do, immediately it buys us, for lack of a better term, it buys us some capital, some relational capital with them. Even though my folks at Holly Grove, I don't think they really understand what I do. They don't really know what I do. I mean, I think they very much appreciate it. They know I do something at Southeastern, but they don't know the ins and outs of it. And it doesn't matter all that much to them. They just know when I show up to church on Sunday and on Wednesday evenings, and sometimes I'm tired and sometimes I'm stressed, and sometimes they know that I understand what their life is like. And in fact, I had a gentleman in our church. He's just joined our church, and he took his time doing so because of some of his own history. But he came to me one time after the service, and he's bounced between Baptist churches and Presbyterian churches. He's even planted churches in the past. And he said, "You know, Benjamin, when I hear you and our staff, everybody on our staff is bivocational. He said, when I hear you guys talk about that we need to give more to the church, or we have an issue financially or time-wise, we just need people to be more generous towards the church. He said, I can hear that from you in ways that I've struggled to hear from people in the past. And he gave a specific example of, he said, I was a member at XYZ church at XYZ location one time. And he said, the preacher, there was a particular season where just over and over and over, he was asking people to give more, give more, give more. And he said, there's nothing wrong with that. And there were good reasons for it. But he said, when I looked at the church budget and saw that pastor was being paid $130,000 a year, he said, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It just didn't encourage me to give more. Sure. So among other things, that's one huge benefit is your people can relate better. You can relate to them better. And then I'll just add this, and there's more to say, but another one as it relates to just financial matters, when I came back to Holly Grove and we began talking about staying on as the long-term pastor, I felt like Holly Grove for a small church had a very generous salary package for a pastor. But at the same time, I just being candid, and I'm not being, this is no false modesty, but I couldn't give them that much time. The amount of money that they were willing to put on my plate for me even being bivocational, I just say, guys, I can't give you that. And it doesn't matter how much money you pay. That doesn't give me more time. And that for me is the bigger struggle. So I just kind of made the request of, what if I take that, basically break it in half, and then let me hire some help. So hire an associate pastor, hire a youth pastor, hire a secretary, a worship leader, those kind of things. And over the last 7 years, by God's grace, we've been able to do that. And it's been remarkably, remarkably helpful. And I think it's said a lot. Just in the people that the Lord has brought to the church has been such a huge part of it. But their willingness and flexibility to think outside the budgetary box a little bit has been really helpful.
That's good. Let me chase that just a little bit. First of all, how many part-time staff members do you have with you?
About six, and then a handful of interns. So depending on the semester, we might have 3 to 5 interns, and they're making maybe $75 a month. But then there's about six other part-time staff as well. Anything from lead pastor to associate, youth, worship leader, church secretary, and children's director.
So you've been able to maximize the number of staff you have without wearing out the budget in the process. So I love that. You do, though, have the unique opportunity to do this because you are within driving distance of Southeastern. What would you say to the pastor listening who says, I'd love to do that, but I don't pastor near one of our seminaries? What are your responses to that pastor?
Yeah, it's a very real situation, and we are very, very blessed to be close to, at least within 35 minutes of Southeastern. At the same time, I've known a lot of pastors and still know a lot of pastors who maybe they're not next to a seminary, but they're closer to a college or a university, maybe like where you are right now near Carson Newman, Dr. Lawless, where there are men and women who are maybe majoring in at the undergraduate level, or just people who are in the church thinking about how do I prepare to prepare for some type of ministry that the Lord's called me to. Sometimes that's people who say, look, I really want to pastor. But sometimes that's people who say, in fact, I've got a student right now at Southeastern who's a game warden in Middle Tennessee who does not desire at this point in his life to be a pastor, but he wants to be a trained, educated lay leader. So he's doing a degree at Southeastern by distance. And I think there's more of those people in our backyards than we realize. Sometimes we just need to put it on their radar, tell them you can do certificate level training, or you could do some other training by distance, and then create opportunities for things like internships and other things like that. If we can begin, in fact, when I came back to Holly Grove, at the very beginning, part of the vision casting that we did included an internship program. And it was probably 3 years before there was anybody in that internship program. And to be honest, when I use that language, I'm not sure many, if anybody in our church knew what I was talking about. But over time, just kind of casting that idea, casting that little bit of vision, over time, people begin to ask more about it. People begin to hear about it. And sometimes from within and sometimes from without, people were coming to us saying, hey, I hear this might be an option. Let's talk about that. And then that's actually kind of generated further momentum.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we look around the people God's already given us and ask, might there be somebody in the congregation who's thinking in this direction? But honestly, Dr. Quint, we as pastors don't do a very good job of calling out the called.
We really
don't lay that on their shoulders. And then so many of us are within driving distance of a university or a college that may well have some decent collegiate ministry already. And why not? Why not tap into those folks? And so while there are certainly advantages of being near a seminary, you can figure out how to do this if you're praying for laborers and you're seeking people that God's already set apart for that purpose.
Here at Southeastern, we believe that the Great Commission is the church's mission. That is why we are committed to ministry preparation in partnership with the local church. Through more than 40 advanced graduate and undergraduate degrees, we offer robust biblical and theological education that equips students to serve the church and fulfill the Great Commission. Visit sebts.edu to learn more.
Yeah, so Dr. Quinn, you kind of alluded to, some of the challenges that may come with bivocational ministry, one of those being time. I'm sure there's others as well. So what are some of the challenges that you have faced trying to, serve here at Southeastern, but also pastor your church bivocationally?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, something I wanted to mention earlier, and I want to go ahead and put a pin in this now just to be clear. I think we've heard the refrain over and over in the past, or that there's this assumption in the past that a church that won't pay a pastor full time is just being derelict in their duty to pay someone their worthy wages. And sometimes that's true, but that's not always true. And I just want to put that out there. That is not always true. And then at the same time, I've advised churches, some churches in our area, who maybe they can afford a full-time pastor, but they probably shouldn't. I'm not sure that they have enough for that person to do right away. And then secondly, it may not be the best use of their funds to allocate that much of the little bit that they have towards full-time. So I simply want to put that out there, that I don't think that it's some categorical error if people can't pay full-time. At the same time, full-time is a great option when you can do that and when it all makes sense. And you just have to be wise in those decisions. In terms of challenges, there are a couple of them that come to mind, and most of these will revolve around time. I think for our team, and everybody on our team is bivocational, I expect anybody who's on the ministry leadership team is bivocational. We have to be very, very organized. We have to communicate and over-communicate and then over-over-communicate because it doesn't matter what your situation is at any given church. The opportunity for things to fall through the cracks is always there. And it doesn't matter if you're full-time or not. But when you're juggling multiple vocational plates like bivocational work or co-vocational work, you have to be that much more diligent. So here's how that cashes out for me practically, is that I have to make sure when I'm meeting with my leadership team that I have a very clear agenda, that agenda it includes remembering what we talked about last time, making sure that we're carrying over conversations so that people, for example, who are in the process of joining our church or they've expressed interest in membership, there's about three or four steps in that process that if we're not really diligent about this, especially given all the other things that we juggle, if we're not really diligent about this, people will fall through the cracks. And that's obviously not good care for people, especially who are trying to become members of your church. And so it's a lot of that kind of stuff that we have to just be especially careful towards. Whereas maybe in a larger church, if you have dedicated administrative assistants that can help with that kind of stuff, maybe those things are not quite as much of a challenge. But for us, that is a challenge. I have my to-do lists and job description responsibilities for my Southeastern work, just like I do with the church. And I just have to be really, really diligent there. I think the other side, I'll just mention one more challenge, is I find myself saying this often to my team, my pastoral team. I'll say, if we had more time or if we were full time, we wouldn't be doing this meeting or having this conversation in 90 minutes. Instead, maybe every quarter or twice a year or something, we would be doing this in some kind of a retreat setting over 2 days. And we desire to do those things. In fact, we're even trying to plan just kind of a prayer retreat and a renewal retreat for our team. And I hope that we can, but I also have to be flexible with the fact that maybe not everybody's able to go this time, or it might just be me and one other. And that's okay. You know, that's some of what we just have to work with and sometimes work against when people are bivocational. And that's okay. I guess at the end of the day, it's the challenge of time and also sometimes the letting go of ideals. I wish it could be a little bit different, but that's okay. And we can let go of some of those ideals sometimes.
Yeah. That's really helpful, especially the points about the organization, communication. And you mentioned there's a opportunity cost that comes with all of that. There's time and energy that you have to pour into it. And so maybe let's drill down there. You spoke at our bivocational luncheon a couple of weeks ago, and I thought you made this really good point. You know, with bivocational, there's often that question of balance, right? How do you balance, you know, the job that you're working? How do you balance your church responsibilities? You haven't even talked about caring for your family well and loving and serving them well, and then also your own spiritual disciplines and rest. But you asked the question, is balance the right word? Would you mind to just speak a little bit more about that in terms of this conversation?
Yeah, thanks, Caleb. Maybe I'm just getting old and cantankerous here, Caleb. I don't know. But here's my thoughts on this, at least at this stage of my life. I don't know that balance, the way that we talk about it, is the right word or that it's even necessarily biblical. What we are without question called to is faithfulness. And that's not a mind-blowing concept. But sometimes if we're being faithful in faithfulness, we might be out of balance. Now, let me be very clear. I'm not saying that we should be out of balance, but I think that faithfulness, by and large, it will ensure or at least point us towards a certain amount of balance. At the same time, accounting for times when there's sometimes where you can't be out of, you can't be balanced when you have three deaths in 1 week, which we've done twice. Now, let me be a little more practical here. So when it comes to faithfulness, just being mindful that the Christian life is a call to an extreme love for God and an extreme love for God's people or for others, for our neighbors. So that already means that some kind of mere horizontal balance is probably almost off the table. While at the same time, faithfulness will look like some measure of at least attempt towards equitable distribution across one's vocations and callings. I'm a dad and a husband. I'm a professor. I also work with our Center for Faith and Culture. I'm a pastor. I also do some consulting for theological education. I'm a neighbor. I mean, all these different kinds of things. When I think about the things that I get paid to do, Caleb, from 7 o'clock in the morning until about 5 or 5:30 in the evening, that is the block of time or the footprint of time where, and this is mostly Southeastern stuff with a good bit of church stuff as well, just depending on the day. If I can't do the things that I'm paid to do during that block of time, at least on a regular basis, if it becomes, you know, almost every night, I'm having to go back to my emails after my kids and wife go to bed so that I can catch up and then get up extra early to answer more. Like if it continues to spill outside of that 7 to 5:30 block, then something's got to change. But that's part of how I try to manage that so that when I go home, I can just be home. Now, there are those times when there are the deathbed phone calls or whatever the case is. Those are not constant. And if they became constant, I've got to either reevaluate my commitment or I've got to go back to the church and say, hey, guys, I need to hire another part-time staff, somebody who can help us with that kind of member care need. And that would be the way I would evaluate that. And then as well, a little bit more outside of that footprint is we do have Wednesday night service and then we have Sunday morning stuff. But that, at the same time, I don't necessarily add that into work because I'm going to be going to church at some midweek point, whether it's a small group on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night service, and then I'm going to be at church on Sunday morning. Whether I'm just sitting there or whether I'm preaching, that's a part of that overall weekly footprint that I'm committed to one way or the other. So if I'm able to keep kind of all of my preparation, all of my Southeastern teaching and all that kind of stuff in that broad footprint of, say, 7 to 5:30, and then I can be dad and coach and husband and all these other things after that, by and large, if that's the regular rhythm of our lives, then that's where I think the aim to faithfulness actually pours itself out in balance, by and large. Although, there are times when you have those multiple deathbed situations or you have those just needs of extreme needs that pop up. If our commitment was to balance first, then it would be this, well, sorry, it's 5 o'clock, I'm done, I've got to go to this. Or sorry, it's 3:30, I've got to go to that. And even though we need to be disciplined with our calendar and our time commitments, our call is not first to balance. Balance is this sort of impersonable, equity-driven kind of thing. Faithfulness is love God, love neighbor. And we have to do it in organized and in relatively balanced ways. At least we have to plan and be disciplined with those things. But at the same time, sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. And I think we need good accountability. We need good structures. We need really good self-control and discipline by God's grace. And we need sometimes these conversations to help us rethink how we're stewarding time as much as we are resources.
Yeah, I think that is just so helpful. And I hope that's encouraging to our listeners that balance is not the goal. Faithfulness is, especially in those moments, like you said, when you get those deathbed calls or just life happens. If balance is the goal, it's going to be hard to persevere in ministry and to continue to love God and love your neighbor well if balance is the goal. But faithfulness really hones us in to keep our eyes on Christ and stay focused and persevere even in those hard seasons. So, well, Dr. Quinn, what encouragement would you give to younger guys? You know, you work with a lot of seminary students here at Southeastern. You know, you have some college students and things at your church. What would you give to young, aspiring pastors? So what advice would you give to them as they're thinking about pastoral ministry? And what would you say to them why they should consider bivocational ministry?
Yeah, there's a lot of things here to say. I mean, things that, need to be refrains over and over in our hearts and minds. A strong life in the Word, a strong life in prayer, those things just cannot be said enough. But let me say this, maybe as a little bit of a unique accent here. If you feel called to pastoral ministry or any kind of clerical work, and you're in the process of preparing for that in one way or the other, make sure, do your best to be getting reps, get opportunities. That doesn't mean that you have to go take a job immediately, but at the same time, I would just be very almost too bold about it and say, do not sit on the pew and just be constantly ministered to if you feel called to ministry. Find a way to be teaching on a regular basis, preaching, filling the pulpit, doing music, leading meetings, sitting in counseling sessions, paying attention or kind of, you know, behind the scenes as your pastors are administering the Lord's Supper and as they're administering baptism. And why did you do it this way? Why not that way? Observe how multiple people do these things, because sooner than later, you've got to be doing those things. And so I'd say get reps and put yourself in a place in a church where you can get reps, where you can get experience, whether that's in a formal internship or maybe at a church that doesn't have any help. And this was exactly my situation at Holly Grove the first time. There was the pastor just didn't have much help. He was so kind to bring me in, give me opportunities. I needed a place to flesh out what I was learning in the classroom during seminary life. And these people were so kind. They were so patient. They let me, you know, make a mess of things sometimes, and would just be patient with it. They love me anyway. Find a place where you can do that, where you can learn even your own giftings. Am I good at teaching? Am I not? And then have people who will tell you, can I preach? Can I not preach? What do I prefer? Am I a once a month kind of preacher guy, or am I want to preach every Sunday guy? You know, just get in a place where you can figure out your own skill set and how God's wired you, rather than sit around preparing for ministry but never actually practicing ministry. So that, I think that's the main thing I would say.
And what about for guys, maybe they're here, they're studying, preparing, and bivocational ministry is not a thought on their mind. You know, they imagine that they're going to be in the church, will they be on staff, they'll be full-time right out of seminary. What would be your advice or cautions to them if they have that attitude towards ministry?
Yeah, again, I may be a little bit too bold here, Caleb, but if your imagination and expectation is full-time staff at big church, I'm not saying it won't happen, but the overwhelming majority, what is it, 90-something percent? And you may know the stats better than I do, Caleb, but the 90 to 90-something percent of our Southern Baptist churches, and we're just talking about Southern Baptists, are 75 people and below. And I'll just speak to my own context. The association that my church is in is about 50 churches, 50 to 52 churches. And on any given Sunday, there are 10 of those churches without pastors. And half of those don't even have an interim, which means they are week to week. Who's preaching this week? I would say to guys that are just looking for opportunities that, first of all, that may very well be the place that you serve. Or the place is. You might be in a circuit rider situation where you're going to multiple of these churches. And I wouldn't shy away from that. I also would not shy away from the bivocational. Don't shy away from small churches, and don't shy away from bivocational, which means you need to also be, for lack of a better term, you've got to have some other marketable skill. this may be a separate podcast, Caleb, but when it comes to that, I'm not saying that you necessarily have to get an electrical license or a general contractor's license, or go to law school or anything. You might want to do those things. But I would say be the kind of human being that just loves people and is good with people, such that, you know, your public school system probably always needs some help, maybe in substitute teaching or coaching, or there may be something else in the area, maybe food service or a coffee shop or whatever. I have some good friends that planted a church in D.C. a number of years ago, and both of them got jobs at Starbucks, and they loved it. Not because they love Starbucks, but because they met so many people and it gave them ministry opportunities. It may be that kind of thing, you know, where you're reliable, you're trustworthy, you're a hard worker, you look people in the eye, you care for them, you're listening to them. Guys, these are the kinds of skills that employers want to hire anyway. So be that kind of person and be okay with those kind of jobs, especially when they're very community facing. That might be some of the best ministry that you ever have.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Well, anything else you'd like to say to pastors that are listening or pastors to be that might be tuning into this episode?
Stay the course. I know how difficult that it's been, especially in the last several years in pastoral ministry. I would say work hard, rest hard, have fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. Take your responsibility seriously. Don't take yourself too seriously. And I really mean what I say about work hard, but rest hard as well. At the end of the day, I find myself praying this often. Lord, take my meager loaves and fishes and multiply them in ways that I may never see. But at the end of the day, I only have so much loaf and fish to give. I won't pretend to be able to multiply them all by myself. I'll do that by way of expanding our staff as much as the Lord will allow. And I'm going to work hard. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to hold my head high. And then I'm going to go home and we're going to rest. I'm going to be a dad and I'm going to love Jesus regardless of how people respond to my sermons or whatever the case is. And I would just encourage you to do the same.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Quinn, thank you so much for joining us for this episode.
Thank you, Caleb.
And listeners, we want to thank you for listening to another episode of Pastor Matters. If you found this conversation helpful, consider leaving us a 5-star rating and review. We'd love to hear any feedback you'd be willing to give. As always, it's our mission at the Center for Preaching and Pastoral Leadership to equip and encourage pastors. And I hope that we've done that with today's conversation. And as always, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord, your labor is not in vain.